Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
I have resisted the urge to talk about coronavirus for a while now, but I can't do it any longer. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we talk about apologetics, theology, how to explain. On last week's podcast, Laura came in with Mr. John Paul, so cute, talking about his birth just a few days earlier. So we unexpectedly gave birth to John Paul at home. And one of the reasons I think that contributed to us unexpectedly giving birth at home was because we didn't want to go into the hospital until the very last minute because of their COVID-19 policies. And the specific policy is this. When we went into the hospital, after we gave birth at home, went into the hospital, Laura was given a rapid COVID-19 test, one that you get the results back in 30 minutes. And the policy was this, that if she tested negative, she didn't have to wear a mask, and I was allowed to stay. However, I still had to wear my mask. Now, did that make sense, though? I mean, if I live with Laura and she's COVID-19 negative, what are the odds that I'm going to be COVID-19 positive when we live together and she's negative? It makes absolutely no sense. But whatever, I wore my mask. I wanted to be there for my son, be there for my wife. But here's the thing. If we had gone to the hospital while she was in labor and she had tested positive, if she had tested positive for COVID-19, then I would have been asked to leave. And so the father of the child would not be there. Laura's husband would be gone, and she would have no support person at that moment to help her to get through labor. Now, the hospital was great. I don't know if this is the hospital's policy, or I'm willing to bet, because whenever I spoke about this policy with the hospital administrators and the nurses and the doctors, they all said that the policy didn't make sense. They didn't understand it. But they have to do it. They're just following orders. So I'm willing to bet this policy probably came from the county health department or something else like that, trying to say, well, you can't have visitors during COVID-19. And I get not having visitors in other parts of the hospital for non-essential reasons, right? Non-essential versus essential. But I'm sorry, women who are giving birth, women, only a woman can give birth, by the way, for everyone who has transgender ideology out there. When a woman gives birth, she needs to have a support person with her. She needs someone to advocate for her interests because she's going through one of the most difficult experiences a person can go through in life. And you don't want to have to be negotiating with doctors and nurses about what interventions make sense and what don't while you're giving labor. That's why you have a support person there. That's why I think it's totally asinine at the beginning of the pandemic when some women gave birth and nobody could be present with them to help advocate on their behalf. Now, graciously, the hospital said, well, if Laura tests positive for COVID-19, Trent, you'll have to go home and leave, but somebody else can come in and swap out with you as long as they're not a member of your household. So somebody could come in and kind of take my place as a support person, but I wasn't allowed to stay there. So then I said to the hospital staff, I called them about this on the phone, actually. I said, wait a minute, how does that make sense? Laura tests positive. She's already spreading COVID-19 in the room. And so you're worried about whatever negligible value there'll be if I am there, even if I'm standing 6 feet away wearing my mask. I can't be there. I, the father and husband, can't be there for the birth of my child. So I have to leave, but somebody else who doesn't have COVID-19 can come to this hospital room, be Laura's support person, and the hospital will be complicit in someone else getting infected from COVID-19 and driving up our case numbers. You're telling me that's what the policy is for. The father and husband of this child can't be there because they might have COVID, but somebody else can show up and get COVID. And the hospital just said to me, yeah, we don't really understand the policy, but they just have to follow it. And that's the theme of this show, is that people will do what they're told. I remember reading a book about disasters, and it talked about how people respond in disaster situations, like if a plane crashes or a ship sinks. And psychologists generally divide people into three groups. All right. So 80% of people take orders. 80% of people will follow orders, but they don't give orders or take charge in a situation. 10% of people will take charge in a situation. So if you have a disaster, let's say a plane crashes or a ship is sinking, whatever it may be, or there's a fire, most people will stand around. They're waiting for someone to tell them what to do. Only about 10% of people will take it upon themselves to direct others and be leaders in a crisis situation. So 10% of people are leaders, 80% of people are followers, and 10% of people are neither leaders nor followers. They're the people who go into full-blown hysterics. And so what you find in most of these government overreaches is that somebody at the top sets the policy and most people at the bottom are too cowardly to say, no, I'm not going to enforce this. I don't care what the situation is. I don't care if I lose my job. I'm not going to enforce an unjust or irrational law or policy. But for government officials, it's par for the course for them. So the first example that I would give you of a COVID-19 overreach that impacted us personally now is the hospital policy saying that if my wife tested positive for COVID-19, I would have to leave and miss the birth of my child. And you know what? I was prepared to stay there until the police dragged me out. I'm sorry. I think it was a ridiculous policy, but I'm glad it all worked out. It's funny. I prayed to God, Lord, I'll follow your will in this. I just want this baby to be healthy. And I just pray, God, I just want to be there at the birth of my child. Even if I have to leave, even if the police show up, walk me out of the hospital after John Paul is born, that's fine. I was praying, Lord, I just want to be there when John Paul is born. And you know, God has just a great sense of humor. He looks down at me and says, oh, okay, Trent, your prayer is you want to be present at the birth of your child? Sure. How about you'll be present and you'll be the only one present? You'll deliver your child unexpectedly. So I am grateful that that worked out, but these policies, especially in healthcare settings, the overreach policies don't make sense, especially when there are policies that would have helped that weren't implemented. So on the one hand, you'll have hospitals saying that no one can be there when a pregnant woman when a woman is giving birth, she can't have a support person with her out of fear of COVID, or a priest can't be there to give last rites, or a relative can't be there to hold a person's dying hand. You can't have that. But then you have other situations where the government will tell nursing homes that they have to take people who are COVID-19 positive, which in some states contributed to the majority of COVID-19 fatalities, was forcing nursing homes to take COVID-19 patients. I think when people look back, they do the retrospectives on this pandemic, that will go down as one of the biggest blunders and something that the media, you know, frankly, covered up and politicians covered up. The problem here is that when government engages in this overreach, it destroys the morale of the citizens, so they're less likely to go along with following the orders. Because here's the thing, government cannot make people obey the law. There are just not enough members of law enforcement to make people obey the laws. If everyone decided to break the law, the government would be helpless to stop people. Most of our civil society is civil because of a social contract between each of us that we all voluntarily agree to obey the laws and be civil and congenial with one another. But if people get the sense that the laws are irrational or don't make sense, or that the COVID-19 policies, some of which do make sense about wearing masks and social distancing in many settings, those do make sense. If you try to force people to follow the irrational laws, all you're going to get is that people lose the will and the resolve to follow the rational laws, the ones that do make sense, that we do need to get people to follow. So the reason I'm concerned about these overreach and COVID-19 laws is not just because they inconvenience me or deprive me of civil liberties, which is really important, by the way, but it's that they are counterproductive to the very goal of stopping the pandemic from spreading and saving lives. That once again, if you force people to follow irrational laws, they're going to lose the willpower they need to follow the rational ones. Here's an example from Pennsylvania at the beginning of the pandemic at the end of March. Pennsylvania State Police cited 19-year-old Anita Lynn Schaffer for violating a stay-at-home order in York County after police say she went on a leisurely drive on March 29th. A leisurely drive is not essential travel, is what the state trooper said. But look at this. This woman was not endangering anyone from a virus. She was in her car, driving around her neighborhood, trying to not go stir crazy, and yet you get slapped with a ticket. Why? Well, because you have to just stay in your home. Why? Because we said so. Not because you're actually a danger to other people. It would be one thing if she had gone out to a place and engaged in reckless behavior, like, I don't know, take part in a giant protest maybe. Oh, you're not going to get cited for that. She was driving around in her car. Here's actually a great montage from John Stossel over at Reason. He did a video, this was back at the end of April, talking about coronavirus overreach. And I appreciate that Stossel includes in this video something that happened here in Encinitas, and which is a city in Southern California. I often take my family to the beach there. It's about 30 minutes away from where we live. And they went into full overreach mode in Encinitas. It was absolutely absurd what happened. So that's part of in this video, but I like Stossel's montage here of other examples of government overreach in combating this pandemic that are just totally counterproductive or, frankly, unconstitutional.
Arbitrary is how it looks. Big stores may stay open, but they must not sell certain things.
Big box stores will also have to close areas of the store that are dedicated to things like carpet or flooring, furniture, garden centers, plant nurseries, or paint.
But things like gardening and painting are activities that can be done far from other people. So is exercise. But watch out in California.
A paddleboarder is chased down by law enforcement for being out on the water at Malibu Beach.
This man was more than 6 feet from anyone, but police chased him down. In Encinitas, California, police gave $1,000 tickets to people watching the sunset. Yes, they were inside cars, not endangering anyone. That day, the police posted this video saying, "We go to work for you."
We're going to continue to be doing enforcement. We're dealing with the crisis at this point, and we want compliance from everybody because this is lives that we're trying to save.
Let me reiterate what happened in Encinitas. People were sitting in their cars watching the sunset. They weren't allowed to go to the beach. The beaches had been closed. They were sitting in their cars looking at a sunset, and they got ticketed for that. Serves absolutely no purpose whatsoever. No one can present evidence, and you can't present evidence of someone sitting in their car that somehow they're going to infect other people. There's no scientific evidence backing it, but it didn't matter because government had a vague, ambiguous mandate to protect people, and they had these emergency powers that seem like they can be extended indefinitely. And I remember at the beginning of this pandemic, I called the police and asked them, can my church, can we sit in our cars at our church and listen on the radio or hear through a loudspeaker the service being undertaken? Can we sit in our cars in the parking lot of our church? And the San Diego Police Department said, we're not going to respond to something like that. The County Board of Health, I called them. They could not give me a straight answer because that's the problem. When government implements these rules, you have a maze of bureaucrats to deal with, and it's impossible to get a straight answer out of them. So the rules stay in place because you have a bureaucratic logistical nightmare that keeps them in place. And here's another example is overreach with cars. This is in Greenville, Mississippi. Churchgoers who attended a drive-in service at a church in Greenville, Mississippi, were fined $500 for reportedly violating a curfew order from the mayor. During a Thursday night service at King James Bible Baptist Church, while parishioners sat in their vehicles listening to Pastor Charles Hamilton, Greenville police surrounded the church parking lot. Jeremy Dice with First Liberty Institute is representing Pastor Hamilton and says police were violating the church's constitutional right while enforcing a curfew order from Mayor Eric Simmons. They park in their parking spaces. They keep their windows up. The doors closed. They never get out of the cars like the CDC recommends they do, Dice said. There's no exception to the United States Constitution for a pandemic. Now, I know some people say, well, Trent, the freedom to assemble, that can, you know, we need to suppress this for, you know, in a pandemic. We have to do it to keep people safe. Now, I understand that there is no absolute right to assemble necessarily, that there are reasons for objective public order as long as they are content neutral to prevent people from peaceably assembling. So I'm glad, like in my neighborhood, people can't walk down the street at 3 a.m. with bullhorns loudly proclaiming their message, which they have been doing in Portland, Oregon, by the way. It's terrifying in Portland. You have the Antifa crowd. They walk down the street. Well, here, let me play a video. This is what they do. They've been doing in Portland. They walk down the street shining lights in people's houses and laser pointers and telling people to wake up. And it's absolutely terrifying. I don't even know what I would do if people were marching by my house at 3 a.m. doing something like that. So I am okay with content neutral restrictions, reasonable time, place restrictions on freedom of speech. But on the other hand, I'm really suspicious of these arguments like, well, the Bill of Rights doesn't apply because this is such an emergency. Well, then where is it going to end? What if somebody says that climate change is such an emergency, the government needs to censor people who are skeptical of climate change or have different views on climate change or whatever it may be? I'm not going to enter into the debate over climate change here on this episode. But my point is, imagine if you took that line of reasoning that, well, we can restrict civil liberties if we think that is just what is best for society overall. That is not what America was built on. That is not what the Bill of Rights was founded on, to give us our freedoms and makes America such a unique country, such a great country. But second, remember when I talked earlier about reducing morale? I think a lot of people, their morale for carrying out social distancing restrictions and regulations, it takes a massive blow when you turn on the news and see that people are getting arrested for sitting in their cars looking at the sunset, but they can march through the streets at 3 a.m. shouting profanities at people and giant hordes of groups together, you start to think, wait a minute, this is just a giant scam. If government really thought this was a problem, then they would come in and they would break this up and tell people, you cannot be out. We're in the middle of a pandemic. You can't be doing this. And yet they don't. So it makes the average person think, wait a minute, this is not a big deal at all. Why am I bothering following these rules when government won't punish egregious violators of the rules because these violators happen to share many political views with these government officials? Ed Faeser on his blog has a wonderful article about this. He posted, I think, like a month or two ago. But this is what he writes in part of it. He says, after weeks of peddling panic about the supposedly grave dangers of mass gatherings, many of these experts, journalists, and politicians suddenly decided a few weeks ago that having thousands of left-wing protesters packed together in the streets across the country and for days was just fine. This rather gave the game away. Not because these experts, journalists, and politicians don't care about the lives of left-wing protesters, but precisely because they do care. They hardly want hordes of fellow left-wingers dropping dead or confined to hospital beds, especially not when there is political hay to be made by having them riled up. People aren't completely stupid. They can draw the obvious conclusion that the experts, journalists, and politicians who approved of the protests don't really believe that people in the age range and with the health status of the typical protester are in serious danger from the virus. Hypocrisy isn't a good reason to reject an argument, but it is an excellent reason to reject testimony. If people offer advice about matters of safety that they don't hold even if their own friends, that they don't even hold their own friends to, you can be sure they don't really believe it. The jig is up. Telling everyone now to get back inside again sounds at this point like pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Meanwhile, the sainted Dr. Anthony Fauci tells us that he and other officials were lying when they initially said that face masks were unnecessary. Remember that? I remember I didn't buy a face mask. They said they weren't necessary. And they later came out and they said, yeah, we said that so there wouldn't be a run on the masks. You lied to us in order to achieve a certain goal. How do I know you're not lying now? It boils my blood to see that. Faeser says Fauci lied, you know, he lied about that. And then the next breath complains that many people don't trust authorities like him. Crack immunologist though he is, Dr. Fauci is evidently no expert on logic or even basic human psychology. So let me spell it out for him. Faeser is just a great writer. I think he's great. I disagree with him on something, but I love his style. Let me spell it out for him. When you frankly tell people that you will lie to them, when you think doing so is for their own good, they are bound to wonder whether your next remark is also a lie. And to give you a recent example of that, here's a news story from a week ago out of Nashville, Tennessee, where the city and local government withheld information about COVID-19 because they felt it would undermine their lockdown efforts. How would it do that? Because they withheld information showing that COVID-19 was not as serious in bars and restaurants. And they deliberately hid that from the public instead of being straight up with them. So this is a fascinating report. This is from the local Fox affiliate, Fox 17 in Nashville. I need to play it for you to see what's happening and how infuriating this is.
On June 30th, contact tracing was giving a small view of coronavirus clusters. Construction and nursing homes causing problems, more than 1,000 cases traced to each category. But bars and restaurants, a total of just 22 cases. Leslie Waller from the health department asked, quote, "This isn't going to be publicly released, right? Just info for mayor's office?" "Correct. Not for public consumption," answers the mayor's senior advisor, Benjamin Eagles.
So the reporter's talking about internal emails among government officials that they realize, oh, there's only out of like 20,000 cases, only 22 of them are in restaurants and bars. And we're talking about closing restaurants and bars, destroying people's livelihoods, forcing them into poverty. And is there a good reason for it? Now, the Nashville government wants to hide the fact that there is no good reason. Keep listening.
One month later, the health department is asked point blank about the rumor that there are only 80 cases traced to bars and restaurants. Tennessean reporter Nate Rao asks, quote, "The figure you gave of more than 80 does lead to a natural question. If there have been over 20,000 positive cases of COVID-19 in Davidson and only 80 or so are traced to restaurants and bars, doesn't that mean restaurants and bars aren't a very big problem?" Metro Health Department spokesman Brian Todd asks five Metro Health Department officials the question, "Please advise how you recommend I respond." The name at the top of the response is clipped off, but you may find the answer unacceptable. Quote, "My two cents, we have certainly refused to give counts per bar because those numbers are low per site. We could still release the total though, and then a response to the over 80 could be, quote, because that number is increasing all the time and we don't want to say a specific number." Neither the health department or the mayor's office would confirm the authenticity of the emails. But Councilman Steve Glover asked a Metro staff attorney to inquire. Here's the official answer. "I was able to get verification from the mayor's office and the Department of Health that these emails are real," answered the staff attorney. Glover says this adds up to a cover-up.
They're fabricating information. They've blown their entire credibility now, Dennis. It's gone.
And that's the point I'm trying to drive home here in this episode. I am not someone who is against government responses to COVID-19. I am not somebody who thinks COVID-19 is a big deal. It is precisely because I believe it's a big deal and I believe government needs to respond that government should respond in the most reasonable way and the most transparent way in doing so. But when you have officials just passing rules and regulations with a because I said so mentality, that's not going to work because guess what? The only thing that can curtail a pandemic and restore order and improve people's health is us. It's you and me making smart decisions in our day-to-day lives. And the help we need from government then is honesty, transparency, and reasonable accommodation so that we can live our lives knowing that we're going to take risks. Government should enable us to take reasonable risks and not force people into destitution, into poverty, into mental health crises for no good reason. So I would just encourage you, make smart decisions. And then when government puts forward regulations, you need to do the legwork to assess them, see if there's good evidence to support them, good reasoning behind it. And if not, challenge your elected official. And what makes me really frustrated now is that because of COVID, it's really hard to do that. Like, you can't just go to a city council meeting and complain to the city councilors or the county health department because they've closed the meetings for public health. And so the city officials, government officials cut themselves off from everyone. So the big thing that I want people to take away from this is this. The only thing that will stop this pandemic and can improve public health is us, is you and me making smart decisions in our day-to-day lives. So some COVID-19 responses, they do make sense. But others, like I've talked about here, and there are others I didn't even mention, like here in California, like breweries are closed, but wineries are open. In Michigan, they said you could sail a sailboat, but you couldn't drive a motorboat. These kind of rules, they don't make sense and they destroy morale. So make smart decisions in your life and then contact your elected representatives and be in communication with them when they are passing things that make absolutely no sense. And if they are incompetent in their jobs, remember that and tell your friends that when elections come around again for these people, for them to be held accountable for the bad decisions that they've made, whether it's at the local, state, or at the federal level. So I haven't done a rant episode in, I don't know, ever. But I hope you enjoyed that. Maybe you can commiserate with me. I hope you are all doing well. I will say a prayer for all of you listening. Maybe you could be enduring a lot here from this pandemic. I'll certainly say a prayer, especially for any of you who may have lost loved ones or become sick from this or lost a job through this. Like I said, this is serious. This is a serious problem. So we need a serious response. We don't need responses from government that are actually counterproductive and make the pandemic worse. I think anybody listening to this podcast, wherever you stand on COVID-19, you would agree with that sentiment. We need reasonable government responses and unreasonable ones actually make the problem worse. So I hope that was helpful for you all. I'll say a prayer for us. I'll say a prayer for you guys. And I just hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.